United States against Adams. Mr. Tassa.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, I'm George Tassa with the Federal Public Defender's Office in Peoria, Illinois. This is the sixth appeal that our office has taken involving knock and announce issues from the Central District. Only in this case, we have a new wrinkle, U.S. versus Langford. In the Langford case, this court ruled this year, while our case was pending in the district court below, that the inevitable discovery exception to the exclusionary rule basically trumps the exclusion of evidence seized in violation of the knock and announce rule.
Are you appealing simply to preserve the issue pending the outcome of Sutton?
Thank you, Your Honor. That's exactly what we're doing. We want to keep this appeal alive, and I learned from the internet yesterday in case number 02-473, U.S. versus LaShawn Banks. This is the Supreme Court docket number. The issues raised in our brief are essentially identical to the issues that are being appealed by the government in the Ninth Circuit's case of U.S. versus Banks. Oral argument before the Supreme Court is scheduled for October 15. Accordingly, I respectfully request leave to file a written motion or to make an oral request that this appeal be stayed pending the Supreme Court's decision.
Now, we considered whether to stay Langford and then Sutton in turn. And what we've done is with all these cases, and of course you can file a protective cert petition. You have preserved your claim here, but they will be before the Supreme Court. The Banks may well be resolved without reaching this issue, because the court could resolve it on the merits. So other cases presenting this issue for the Supreme Court will be on its menu when it resolves Banks.
I'm reading this court's denial of rehearing and Bank. It is my understanding that the court ruled that Langford's substantive claim was shaky at best. That there was a search warrant in that case. That the issues were so clear-cut, as this court, I believe, indicated, that the Langford issue is really secondary. In this instance, the point I wish to make with respect to the knock-and-announce violation here. Normally, factual findings are reviewed for clear error. However, this court has recognized that when the district court credits exceedingly improbable testimony, that deference is normally not going to be given. And in this instance, the point that I wish to score with this appeal is that the district court accepted the testimony of Officer Kuve, but did nothing to consider and take into account unimpeached testimony of a 24-year veteran case agent, Timothy Anderson, who stated to the court under oath that the report that he generated as a result of this search, which is contained in the appendix of brief, was fairly, accurately, and truthfully records what Kuve told him on the day of the search as to what happened at the front door which precipitated the entry. You simply cannot reconcile Anderson's report and testimony with Kuve's impeached testimony have sustained the government's burden of proof that exigent circumstances justify the censure.
I'd like to just mention a little bit. Was there more evidence than the cocaine found in Adams' pocket? Because it seems like a personal use amount, but he was charged with possession with intent to just.
There were two post-arrest statements that Mr. Adams gave, wherein he indicated he was holding it as a favor for another individual, which would involve his having to transfer possession back to the individual whom he was holding it for. No statement was ever made that it was for his personal consumption. But secondly, in all candor, 5 grams of crack, whether it's for simple possession or possession with intent to distribute, is going to warrant the same guideline sentence anyway. It's going to be a go up of 26. So we're right where we start, and a 5-year minimum for the greater offense. So in Mr. Adams' case, personal consumption, possession of intent, it didn't matter here. He gets the 62-month sentence.
So in other words, there wasn't additional evidence?
There was about $600. There was a sizable sum of cash found on his person as well. It was stated in the brief over the smile.
Yeah, well.
But there was no scale, no wrapping papers,
no
the other paraphernalia that we normally see in these cases. But when Judge Mim credited the testimony of Officer Cuvee, Judge Mim said nothing with respect to the unimpeached testimony of the case agent and affiant officer. And therein lies the rub. The government has the burden of proof. This is Lewis versus Dice, the Sixth Circuit case. The government has that burden to prove the existence of exigent circumstances allowing them to dispense with non-announced requirements. And what the government gave the court below as its factual predicate for this entry was Kubay's testimony and Anderson's testimony. And Anderson's testimony mirrors the report that's in the brief, and it very accurately and truthfully records what Kubay told Anderson in the day. Interestingly, Kubay said before the district court that he recalls talking to Anderson on the day of the execution of the warrant, but he can't recall telling Anderson anything about the suspicious movements of the black female. 2 weeks prior to the motion to suppress hearing, Kubay admits that for the first time he sees Anderson's report, but doesn't recall whether he ever told Anderson about the omission and the discrepancy that exists between the report and his testimony. Kubay hands us this curveball in the middle of the motion hearing for the first time. And when Anderson testifies that this truthfully contains what Kubay told him, one can only conclude that Kubay's testimony has the rank odor of a five-week-old dead fish, as Judge Bauer so artfully said in one of the decisions. Clear error to credit that testimony, and for that reason, this court should find a knock-and-announce violation. Therefore, if the Supreme Court in Banks affirms the knock-and-announce rule and rejects the inevitable discovery requirement, we've got a winner. And Mr. Adams may get released from prison. So we respectfully ask that the appeal be kept alive and the court find a knock-and-announce violation. We respectfully acknowledge the existence of adverse precedent, but the Supreme Court may have another opinion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Walters.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Casta. Your Honor, for Mr. Adams to prevail, he's really got three hurdles or three wrinkles to get over, and that's first, the clearly erroneous standard. He has to show that Judge Mim clearly erred in his finding of fact. The second, of course, that he's recognized is Langford and now the Sutton decision most recently from this court. And thirdly, Your Honors, we also believe that at most, even if there was a violation, it was a de minimis violation or de minimis harm. And
what?
This court...
Forgive me.
No, Your Honor.
Finish your thought, then I'll try to help you.
Oh, but in marginal cases, this court has stated that the exclusionary rule is not an appropriate remedy. So each of those hurdles, Your Honor, this defendant has to cross get over before Judge Mim can be reversed in his holding. Yes, Your Honor.
Why was Mr. Adams charged with possession with intent to distribute? It's an awfully small amount of crack. What additional evidence was presented to the grand jury, if you can tell me?
Your Honor, one thing I would note that I respectfully just disagree with Mr. Casper on one point. I do believe there was a scale found in the home. It's an additional scale. That wasn't part of the suppression record, though, before Judge Mim or before this court. There was also a bandolier that had ammunition in it, different types of ammunition. There was no handgun found. There was, as I said, it's an additional scale. And then we have the defendant's post-arrest statement stating that he is holding this crack cocaine or cocaine base for another individual. So it's bad evidence upon which the possession with intent charge was brought against Mr. Adams. But as far as Mr. Tappas' comments about Judge Mim not considering Officer Anderson's testimony and finding Mr. Kubay or Officer Kubay credible, Your Honors, I respectfully disagree. Reading the transcript and Judge Mim's ruling, he was very cognizant of the fact that this report offered by Officer Anderson was silent with regard to the movement that Officer Kubay testified that he saw when he was standing at the front door. And he goes at length in his order, or in his oral order, stating that Peoria Police Department needs to do a better job of writing those reports. This judge listened to both Officer Anderson's testimony and Officer Kube's testimony, and he respectfully, unlike this court, was in a position to judge the demeanor and the candor of that witness in making his credibility determination.
Yeah, but can you imagine can you imagine such frustration? From today on, not you, Mr. Adams, but from today on, I'm not giving you guys the benefit of the doubt. I've never seen a district judge say, I'm so tired of hearing these songs and dances from the police department that, you know, you have a higher burden before me from now on. Cause your confidence to be shaken a little bit in his credibility decision.
Your Honors, with all due respect to this court and to Judge Mann, he is a very prudent jurist, and as far as considering the evidence, I do believe that the court's ire was raised because of this, and he might have made what this court, in now looking at a transcript, might see as less than appropriate.
Actually, this is at least the second time I have seen the essentially identical statement from Judge Mann. He said the same thing for similar reasons about 4 years ago. And either he repented of the statement or he forgot it.
I'm unaware of what he said 4 years ago, Your Honor, but I will say that...
He must be saying more often than that. I can't be sitting on these cases every time Judge Mann says something like that.
I'm sure Mr. Passer will probably speak to it better than I've seen him because he's been in front of him many more times. But I will say that we did take... I personally did take his statements to heart because it took a copy of his transcript and made a portion of the judge's statement and sent it to the chief of police from the Peoria Police Department. So we do take it seriously, and at least in the U.S. Attorney's Office, as far as the necessity of these police officers writing good reports. And yes, we can see that this was a very poor police work as far as report writing is concerned in this case. With all due respect to Mr. Tassif, it was not at the suppression hearing when we first heard of this. We at least, when I wrote the response to the motion to suppress, I did bring up what Kube would testify to, and it was inconsistent with what was stated in the report. But I also understand, in his defense, that that was just a Wednesday or Thursday prior to the next week's hearing. Yeah, I believe you were going to ask a question.
I'm just, you know, it just doesn't seem just. To decide that Mr. Adams doesn't get the benefit of Judge Mann's doubt when from that day forward everyone else will.
Your Honor, I think that it's important to look at the preceding comments as well, and the fact that he did go through and weigh the testimony prior to that as far as making his credibility determination. And again, I'm not trying to dodge the issue as far as the court's comments at the end. They are what they are as far as what he said, but it certainly was not my impression when I heard him in court that he gives carte blanche to police officers when they appear before him. But I certainly understand that the court's concern with that. But again, in addition to the clearly erroneous standard that the defendant has to meet, we still go back to this court's precedent, and then also we believe that this is a marginal case at best, given the fact that the four people, or there are four adults in this room that the officers enter that are immediately within the area of the door, that they were on notice that these officers were there. This inside door was open, they were standing in a screen door, they're not. And they entered. They entered before someone could come and open the door themselves. But again, we believe that this is a marginal violation at most, and therefore the appropriate remedy is not exclusion of evidence. If there are no further questions from this court, I return the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tassin.
District Court, this is not a case about inadequate police reports. Officer Anderson's report couldn't be clearer. He fairly, accurately, and truthfully records what Kube told him on the day of the search. Furthermore, Judge Mims has to give a two-based testimony and said it's the responsible of this officer, the lead agent at the head of the line, not to file a report or to supplement the report once the discrepancy is noted in his superior's official report of the incident. And secondly, thirdly, no matter how many times Judge Mim has railed about the Peoria Police Department situation, it just doesn't sink in. We get it in case after case after case, as Judge Easterbrook has mentioned, from earlier cases we've done before.
I'm going to suggest that Judge Mim doesn't really mean it.
Well, I'm suggesting the court needs to basically lower the boom and tell these police officers in a way that the Fourth Amendment was intended. To deter police misconduct, you suppress the evidence. And maybe then they'll write some better reports, as this court should do, in ordering that this case be reversed and the evidence motion be allowed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Cassidy. The case is taken under advisement.